when the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Anna Mateo, and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A volunteer team in South Africa is rescuing pangolins from illegal traffickers as the animals face growing threats of extinction. Although many of the pangolins arrive afraid and badly injured, they are the lucky ones. They have a good chance of survival thanks to a team of volunteers who take care of their wounds, feed them, and bring them back to health. Pangolins, which are about the size of a cat, are unusual creatures. They are the world's only mammals with scales. While they are sometimes called scaly anteaters, they are not related to true anteaters. But, like those animals, their tongues can be very long. Pangolins are not well known, yet they are among the most poached and illegally trafficked animals in the world. Experts warn that the creatures are nearing extinction because of high demand for their scales in traditional medicines in Asia. The African Pangolin Working Group in Johannesburg is a volunteer team of veterinarians and wildlife experts. The group is carrying out the pangolin rescues. Nikki Wright heads the organization. When we receive those pangolins, they are all compromised, whether they have been with the poachers for a few days or sometimes up to 2 weeks, Wright said. They have got wounds, they have got injuries, and it is very pitiful and very difficult to emotionally deal with that kind of suffering and abuse. The animals are often caught in homemade traps, and recently the group received a pangolin cut deeply through its middle by a trap, almost from stomach to back, Wright said. Treatment for the animals often includes receiving fluids and food intravenously as part of a special diet. They are also given drugs at first to sleep for up to 48 hours. The pangolins are then moved to other areas so the wildlife hospital is not targeted by poachers. The pangolin group's chairman, Professor Raymond Jansen, recorded 97 tons of pangolin scales seized from smugglers trying to take them out of Africa last year. This amounts to about 150,000 poached animals. The group is not just treating pangolins, it is also fighting back. It works with police to identify and catch poachers and traitors, often in undercover operations. I'm Brian Lynn.
A study of the lungs of people who have died from COVID-19 has found persistent and extensive lung damage in most cases. This finding may help doctors understand what is responsible for a syndrome known as long COVID. People with this condition can suffer ongoing health problems for months. Scientists leading the research said they found some unusual characteristics of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. These qualities may explain why it is able to cause such harm. One of the co-leaders of the work, Mauro Giacca, serves as a professor at King's College London. He said the findings seem to show that COVID-19 is not simply a disease caused by the death of virus-infected cells. In some patients, he said, the seriousness of the disease is likely the result of the cells persisting for long periods inside the lungs. Giacca and other researchers studied tissues from the lungs, heart, liver, and kidneys of 41 patients who had COVID-19. They all died at Italy's University Hospital of Trieste between February and April 2020. Giacca spoke with Reuters news agency about the team's findings. He said that his research team found no clear signs of viral infection or long-term inflammation in other organs. But they did discover massive damage to the structure of the lungs. Giacca told Reuters that this massive damage could be one of the reasons people are suffering from long COVID. Growing evidence suggests that a small number of COVID-19 survivors can experience some ongoing symptoms. These include extreme tiredness, unclear thinking, and shortness of breath. Giacca noted that almost 90% of the 41 patients he studied had several characteristics unique to COVID-19. One trait was that patients had extensive blood clotting in passageways transporting blood to and from the lungs. Another was that some lung cells were very large and had many nuclei. This was a result of the combining of different cells into single large cells. The researchers also found the coronavirus was still present in many kinds of cells. Giacca said that the existence of infected cells can cause the major structural changes seen in lungs. These changes can last for several weeks or months, and might, he added, explain long COVID. I'm Anna Mateo.
Suppose you are listening to a program in English and hear the word borrow. You have heard this word many times, but forget its meaning. So, you look up the equivalent word in your own language. Ah, yes, now you remember. A few days later, you see the word again, but again cannot remember its meaning. Why? It is easy to blame yourself or think, I have a terrible memory. But your memory is not the problem. The problem is that translating a word to its equivalent word in your language is not an effective way to learn vocabulary. This is because it does not create strong connections in the brain, something critical for remembering information. To really learn words, you have to bring attention to them and connect them with mental images or your existing knowledge. This helps your brain recall words quickly and easily when you need them. On today's education tips, we will discuss three methods that use images to retain vocabulary. First, let's discuss the most straightforward method, using pictures as visual aids. Michelle Zellin is an English teacher and teacher trainer. Zellin says visual aids are important for language learners because humans think in images. She uses pictures or images with her beginning students and some of her mid-level students. Christiane Galvaux has used pictures to teach vocabulary to students of every level, from grade school to the university level. She suggests learners make visual dictionaries with pictures from the internet, for example. This would involve writing an English word next to its image. Before you make the dictionary, think about your goals, she says. If the goal is to reinforce what you already learned about, put the words in alphabetical order and organize them into related groups. But if the goal is to write a sentence using each new word, then you probably do not need to put the words into groups. Next, let's talk about mnemonics. These are mental tools you can use to recall information better. Most mnemonics tools involve creating mental imagery to trigger your memory. Some of you have already done this without realizing there was a name for it. One great mnemonics tool is keywords. This involves making a mental image that ties two similar sounding words together. Take the word bald as an example. It means having little or no hair. The word ball sounds like bald and can help us remember the target word. In your mind, make a mental picture of a ball with a face on it. Then picture it with no hair on top, maybe a little on the sides. Keep this image in your mind for maybe 15 seconds. The next time you try to recall bald, it will be easier because of the keyword and connected imagery. Alex Mullen is a biomedical engineer and one of the world's top memory competitors. In 2016, he was the USA memory champion. Mullen calls the mnemonics keywords tool the art of memory because your mind makes a kind of picture stories. In his video on mnemonics keywords, he talks about remembering the target word coral by joining its imagery with an image of a sea coral. He draws a group of stick figures trapped or corralled in a coral. In real life, you would probably make a mental image rather than a drawing. But Mullen's drawing demonstrates the idea of connecting a mental image of the target word with its keyword. One final method for today is word maps, also known as semantic maps or word webs. In a word map, you write a central word or idea in the middle and connect it with lines to related words. This helps to build mental associations between related ideas. Danielle Zellin gives the example of the word sharp. If you center that word, you can connect it to words of things that are sharp, such as knife, paper, and scissors. Zellin says words are much easier to remember when they have meaning in your own life. For instance, one of her French students has an English-speaking dentist. So she learned words that she needed for her recent dental visit. Christiane Galvaux also says that context is important. She uses word maps in the classroom only after she has already discussed a subject and shown pictures. This makes the words meaningful before putting them into map form. Otherwise, she says, you are just reading and memorizing words, which is a bad idea. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Two summers had gone by since the start of the American Civil War, and the North had not yet won a major battle in Virginia. The Army of the Potomac, the strongest of the Union armies, had tried to seize Richmond, the Confederate capital. General George McClellan moved the army up to the very gates of the city. But then, General Robert E. Lee led his southern forces in a fierce attack. It smashed McClellan's army and drove them away from Richmond. Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles continue the story of the Civil War.
President Abraham Lincoln and his new Chief General Henry Halleck put together a new Northern force. They called it the Army of Virginia. They gave command of it to General John Pope, a successful fighter in the West. Pope began to move south toward Richmond. Halleck ordered McClellan to bring his army up to join Pope. Together, they could smash through the Confederate defenses around Richmond. Lee decided to hit Pope before McClellan could join him. He left a few thousand troops to guard Richmond, then took the rest north. Lee moved up to the Rappahannock River, across from Pope's army.
Lee sent Stonewall Jackson with 24,000 men on a quick march around the western end of Pope's lines. Jackson and his men marched more than 80 kilometers in 2 days. They got behind Pope and seized a huge northern supply center at Manassas. Pope moved to smash them. They burned the captured supplies. Then they moved a few kilometers away to a long, low hill just northwest of the Bull Run battleground, where Southern forces defeated a Northern army a year before. Jackson hid his troops in woods along the hill and waited for General Lee to arrive with the rest of the Southern army.
But before Lee could get there, Union troops, thousands of them, marched down the road below Jackson. Jackson decided to attack, to hold them there until Lee arrived with help. The fighting was furious. Neither side broke. The fighting died down at the end of the day, and Jackson's men moved back to their positions on higher ground. They made their lines along a partly built railroad on the side of the hill.
From his headquarters on the hill, Jackson watched the Northern forces prepare for battle. Many thousands of the enemy were marching into position. Pope brought up all his soldiers, and others were on the way from bases near Washington. Several thousand of McClellan's troops, commanded by General Porter, were arriving from the south. It was a mighty force, much larger than Jackson's army. Jackson was worried. He sent an officer back to find General Lee. He sent a message. Lee must hurry. Jackson faced a big army.
Pope's army was large, but it was poorly organized. The men had been rushed into position. The order to attack was given before all the troops were ready. So, the attack began slowly, and Jackson was able to fight it off. But then, more and more northern soldiers joined the fight. The two sides struggled for hours in the hot summer sun. Jackson's men almost broke. Men prayed for the long day to end. The sun seemed to stand still.
Finally, the sun went down, and the battlefield became dark. Jackson's men had held, but they paid a terrible price. Thousands were killed or wounded. Northern losses were even greater. Most of the Union troops had fought bravely. They had hit the Confederate lines time after time. But one large group of soldiers did not get into the battle at all that day. This was the group from McClellan's Army of the Potomac, led by Fitz John Porter. Pope had ordered Porter to strike at the right end of Jackson's lines. Porter took his troops several kilometers past Jackson's right and stopped them. His soldiers remained there all day, out of the battle. Porter said later, he believed the Confederate forces were too strong for his men.
Other groups of McClellan's men were arriving in Alexandria, 30 kilometers to the east. Pope asked that they be sent to help him. McClellan was ordered to send them immediately, but he refused to do so. He said they were not in condition to fight, and he would not send them. General Pope still thought he was facing only Jackson's army. He refused to believe reports that Lee had arrived on the battlefield with 30,000 more Southern soldiers. Pope thought Lee was still far to the west of Manassas.
Pope knew that Jackson's army had taken a terrible beating in the 2 days of bloody fighting, and he was sure that Jackson would try to withdraw the next day to retreat to the west. Pope divided his forces that night. He left thousands in place in front of Jackson's lines. The others were moved back. They were ordered to get ready for a march west to block Jackson's retreat. Pope made a terrible mistake. Jackson was not planning to retreat. He was waiting with Lee to smash the Northern Army. And that is what happened the next day.
Northern troops attacked Jackson's lines. The fighting was bitter. Pope's forces almost smashed through. But then Lee ordered his men to move forward to help Jackson. Confederate artillery broke up the Northern attack. When the Northern troops began to retreat, Lee and Jackson attacked with all their might. Many of Pope's men were not prepared for battle. They were standing together in groups, ready for marching. They could not stop the Southern attack. The Confederates pushed Pope's army back across the old Bull Run battlefield.
Near the end of the day, Northern forces succeeded in organizing a stronger defensive line. The Southern attack slowed down, then stopped. Lee sent Jackson around the north end of Pope's line to try to stop the Northern retreat. Lee did not want the defeated Union Army to escape. He wanted to destroy it. But heavy rain held up Jackson's troops. They were discovered and attacked by a strong Northern force. Jackson could move no farther. He could not stop Pope's retreat to Centerville and Washington. The Northern Army escaped.
But it left behind thousands and thousands of dead and wounded. Confederate doctors treated their own men, then tried to help the wounded soldiers of the other side. General Lee permitted Northern medical wagons to return to the battlefield, and they began to carry the wounded back to Centerville. Groups of McClellan's army, arriving from Alexandria, met Pope's men in Centerville. They laughed and shouted at the tired, beaten soldiers. Many said they were glad that Pope had lost. One of McClellan's generals, Samuel Sturgis, greeted Pope at Centerville. "I always told you, Pope, that if they gave you enough rope, you would hang yourself."
What happened at Bull Run created bitter anger among the people of the North, anger against their military leaders. People felt that a year had been wasted, that thousands had died for no real purpose. The year before, Southern troops sent a Northern army fleeing from Bull Run. Now it was happening again. The Army of the Potomac was back where it started. As the facts of the battle became known, cries of anger became even louder. The people demanded answers. Why did McClellan and his men move so slowly? Why did they refuse to go to Pope's aid? Why did Pope let Jackson get behind him? Why were 14,000 soldiers lost?
Most members of Lincoln's cabinet believed McClellan was responsible. Treasury Secretary Chase said McClellan should be shot. War Secretary Stanton said he should be dismissed immediately. He and three other cabinet members signed a note demanding that Lincoln remove McClellan as commander of the Army of the Potomac. Lincoln agreed that what McClellan had done was shocking. He said it was clear that McClellan wanted Pope to fail. But Lincoln said he would not remove McClellan. He said he knew that McClellan was not an aggressive general. But he said McClellan was a good organizer who could build the defeated army into a strong force.
General Robert E. Lee, however, would not wait while McClellan rebuilt the army. He decided to carry the war to the north.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.